Coming up, the New York Football Giants continue their pursuit of talent in free agency. We recap what they've done so far, what it means for their cap situation, and if there are key positions that Andrew and I think they can still go acquire on the market. Yes, my friends, it is OGP, the One Giant Podcast, where, of course, we are your hosts over here, Adam Armbrecht, over there, Andrew Makowitz. If you're on YouTube, you got to remember, they mirror these images sometimes. How are we, sir? Healthy, wealthy, and wise, I assume.
I am doing great. Free agency, obviously, is underway. You know, the first couple hours for the Giants, everyone's like, what's Joe Shane doing? And then you see couple big moves happen. I know that you mentioned a couple yesterday going live, Adam, but the Giants definitely got better in the last 48 hours. Now, how much better and at what cost is kind of the question, right?
Yeah, well, you know, and funnily enough, someone had posted up on that first day of, well, you know, just remember in years past, took a little while, and then it was James Bradberry, took a little while, and I can't remember, there's a couple other names there, and including last year,
Jackson Lewinsky. Was one, yeah.
Yeah, and it was like, yeah, so like a couple of them, I was like, yeah, well, just remember, like, not on the team anymore, and not such a good player for us. So, like, it's all good, but once you make the move, let's just make sure that they're quality players and not necessarily be patient. They'll sign somebody, and who knows what they'll be eventually, right? Like, so that was certainly something that I was keeping an eye on. But to your point, how much better has this team gotten, and what else do they need to accomplish when it comes to Okereke and the impending trade for Darren Waller? Where are you on that right now, knowing it's $40 million over here for Okereke? It's going to be 12 million on the books for Darren Waller when he comes in, and also Nunez there, just adding a little bit of depth at the D-line.
Yeah, so I think what we are realizing is that Joe Shane really is saying that his three pillars of smart, tough, and dependable are really important to him with the Okereke signing. Obviously, guy went to Stanford, smart, super sharp guy. It sounds like he's a great locker room guy. Is a beast on the field, 151 tackles last season, was dependable, was out there for the team. And it seemed like, you know, you look at the Tremaine Edmonds going for $18 million and, you know, upwards of 20 at the high end, yes, linebacker position. You know, it feels like Joe Shane got one of the top three or four best linebackers on the market at what I would consider a fairly reasonable deal. Now, I know David Long and others maybe did a couple of shorter-term ones, which would have been nice for the Giants. But, Adam, something I think people forget about moves like this is it takes two to tango, right? Does every player want to come to the Giants if you offer them a contract? right? Like, you could throw money at someone and be like, we should have done that deal. That money would have been great. And it's like, well, did you know he has family down there? Or he's built a house? Or his kids are in this school? Like, does the couple hundred grand either way really change for them? So the Giants can make these offers, but people have to come here. It's nice to see someone like Okereke, who is young, talented, and dependable right out of the gate.
Yeah, and to your point, too, it's like you can very easily turn and say, you know, some guys may look to be signing a little bit more team-friendly contracts on shorter-term deals because they think it's a great spot for them to reset their market and go back out there and get another big payday potentially a couple seasons from now. So all those things factor in. So, yeah, I try not to worry too much about other deals, short of it being like, well, we specifically said we really liked this guy, and it looks like it was a contract the Giants could have done.
Right. And on the Darren Waller front, obviously the Giants get him for their third-round compensatory pick, 100th pick overall. And the initial knee-jerk reaction is Darren Waller is, when healthy, a top five pass-catching wide receiver in the league. 2 years in a row of over 1,000 yards, I think over 1,100 yards in both those seasons. Yep. Obviously, he is a tremendous talent. He has been injured in the last couple seasons. Obviously, you noted that yesterday. So this deal is not without risk. It feels like everyone's like, oh, home run, amazing. There is risk associated to it. But the nice piece of it is no guaranteed money after this season. So the Giants still have flexibility. They may burn a third round pick if it doesn't work out. But there is tremendous upside in this deal.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Like, you know, I stayed all on the positive side of things, acknowledging injury risk and what it could be. He's not like, it's not like he's 26, he's 30, going to be 31 this year. But you mentioned at the $12 million, it means that, and I know Giants fans don't want to hear this in this moment, but it could be, we got a great sample size. It showed us what Daniel Jones is capable as we continue to provide him with weapons. And then we move on after 1 year, and it cost us the third round pick, but it was worth it for the short opportunity. And obviously it makes the team better. And I went through the laundry list of ways it improves the offense for a number of players, from Daniel Bellinger to Wandale Robinson, and then, of course, Barkley out of the backfield too.
Yeah, and the Waller piece of it to me, and this is a question that I had for you. Obviously, $12 million is a big, sizable money investment for Joe Shane. It's the most money that he spent acquiring someone in his time, considering he's had limited cap funds to be able to do some of the big moves he wants. You know, we mentioned we're not really interested in taking a tight end with a first round pick. They're too valuable. Obviously traded a third round pick for Waller. My question is, because he's got the $12.5 million, does it feel like the Giants are done at the weapon position going out and acquiring people? Like, it feels like that $12 million means the Giants are even more invested in one of those first couple of picks in taking a wide receiver, because you have to have someone that's young and cost controlled in that position, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it depends, again, like, how does the market play itself out? We saw early Jakobi Meyers going for $33 million. Now we're seeing Alan Lazard get a big payday, but that's all tangled into the web that is Aaron Rodgers, right? So the wide receiver market, I think, was already a thin market. And we're going to talk about Joe Shane's perspective on that coming up here in a second. I think it's the combination, right? See how it plays out. See who doesn't get signed. There's some names that we'll touch on that Giants fans have certainly been discussing and thinking they could be good fits. I'll throw it out there. It's Hardman, obviously, because he has ties to Mike Kafka going back to Kansas City. So there's possibilities there. But I think the Waller signing is saying, we got a weapon. We added another weapon into this arsenal, and it certainly gives you more flexibility. And I do wonder if he's a quality player. I like the move. But also, the Giants were probably looking around the trade market for wide receivers. And ultimately, if they said, well, it can't be a second-round pick for a wide receiver, it can't be multiple picks for a wide receiver, and it can't be, let's just use DeAndre Hopkins as the example, a wide receiver that wants to come in and earn north of $20 million and wants a new contract, right? So all those things conspire to have the Giants go, how do we improve this team? How do we make it easier to check the boxes when it comes to the draft and not put ourselves in a really bad financial spot?
I have a higher level question so far with what the Giants have done so far, because Adam, we have talked about this being a rebuild, not a 1 year rebuild when Joe Shane came in. You see what Joe Shane has decided to allocate funds to, the moves that he's made, trading draft assets for an experienced veteran like Darren Waller, signing Saquon Barkley, their franchise tag, getting Daniel Jones into a big time contract, you know, addressing the linebacker position in the long term. Do you feel like maybe we have overstated how much of a rebuild the Giants are undertaking, seeing the type of moves that Shane has made so far?
Well, I'll tie it into the thing that we wanted to touch on here too, which is where the cap currently stands for the Giants. $2.47 million of cap room available. Now, that still includes the earmarked money coming off from Kenny Golladay and whatever is going to go on with Leonard Williams. We assume, and maybe today we'll hear something where it goes, we needed more money to make another move, and that's why Leonard Williams will be restructuring to X. I don't know. You know, to me, this it feels like a both and. Keeping Daniel Jones, that can be a part of the rebuild no matter what. You like him, you want him going forward. Saquon Barkley's on the tag. If you tell me that they get a longer-term deal done, that changes my opinion on that. And frankly, I think like the Waller move, Okereke to me is, that's like a long-term because he's 26, prime of his career. This more feels like what Joe Shane probably would have wanted to do going into last year if he could have. Go get a weapon to prove, you know, confirm or deny what we feel about Daniel Jones, right? They already have a confidence and belief in him, but now's the first opportunity we get to continue to add weapons to it. And the way that you hear the Giants talk, and just when you think about the roster, there's still a lot of work to do here. Now, the draft class is going to matter. Go back to last year. A lot of those draft picks, injuries, weren't able to be on the field, right? A lot of turnover. So maybe we have, but I think time tells, right? Like, time will tell. And honestly, coming into last year, everybody had a little bit lower expectations. Giants overachieved. I do feel like the overachieving ratcheted things up a little bit for Giants fans, where now with every piece that you add, you put it on the baseline of like, well, we were a playoff team. We were a 10-win team. So we should only be able to get better from there. In a lot of ways, I think this offseason and draft is going to be trying to maintain what they accomplished last year, be a 9-10-win team and be in that wild card playoff conversation.
Yeah, it feels like Daniel Jones's play elevating to whatever degree you think it elevated kind of expedited the timeline.
Yeah, of course.
Right, because if Joe Shane's like, we got to get the roster better and we got to find our quarterback for a while, well, the contract he just gave out to Daniel Jones says, I believe that we have at least our intermediate quarterback of the future.
Yeah.
And so like at that point, he's like, all right, if we have the guy and we think we could build, let's start building this team maybe faster than we thought. And it looks like a move like Waller does feel like we're accelerating the timeline slightly, but not going all in like some of these other teams are in terms of the cost control that you have Waller under.
I mean, listen, Chicago went absolutely ballistic, and the Raiders, even though it's just rebuilding the New England Patriots down in Las Vegas. Like there are teams that like said, hey, we're going hard in the paint, boys. Like we're committing to this thing. And it's funny because I actually talked about this with Doug Norrie, Locked On Nets, after we were doing the Nets game last night, where he was like, man, like Chicago. And I was like, yeah. And the beautiful thing for them kind of is like they went all in. And also they're in the same boat of like, you have the decision to make on Justin Fields coming up. So it was the all in, let's confirm or deny. That's the difference of having the money to go do all those things versus being hamstrung by the previous GM and saying, yeah, I'd love to confirm or deny. Unfortunately, I don't have the ability or flexibility to do so.
Yeah. Chicago is sneaky. The one thing I was just going to state about that, just how quickly teams go from we're in a full rebuild to like, no, we're ready to compete. Like, Chicago had the number one overall pick. They traded it for multiple first round picks, got DJ Moore, who's the number one wide receiver, went berserk in free agency, getting offensive line help, signing two of the top five linebackers available. Like they basically are saying, no, we're like ready to see what we have with Fields. We're going ahead now. And it just shows that like there's certain teams, like I guess the Texans are one, where it's like, yeah, we're in the rebuild mode, but like how long are you going to be in rebuild mode for? Like you only get a handful of years to turn it around as a GM or a coach. So like if, yeah, okay, 1 year maybe is a rebuild, but you got to show progression. You got to start moving towards something or else you're going to be on the street just like everybody else.
And listen, let's be honest, when it comes to Chicago, not that we're going to spend time talking about the NFC North, but Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers is on his way out. Detroit's a talented team, certainly playing well. Like they're in the mix for that conversation. Minnesota has a lot of talent, but they have Kirk Cousins at quarterback. There always seems to be a limitation. Their defense needs a lot of work. Like Chicago can jump themselves right into the playoff picture, right into the division picture. And that makes a difference too about how much you want to commit. Maybe something to remember when it comes to the Giants and the way that they're spending and trying to build here. There's a lot of talent inside the NFC East. So the last thing I'll say, just around limited cap space right now, we know there's ways to create more. So currently, they brought in obviously two players here and a trade. You talk about Nick Gates exiting to the Commanders. This goes back to some people saying, that's who you go into next season with. It's all good. Nick Gates, sorry. We loved him. Great story. Recovering. I'm not in the business of, you know, committing another question mark there. And we'll get to that coming up. But outside of the list of players that are currently free agents, but have an association with the Giants from last season. Julian Love, that feels like that's a foregone conclusion. They've been working on the money, and it sounds like it's going to be closer to 7 than to 10, which is really good for the Giants. But is there anyone else on the list? Feliciano, Ellis, Williams, Ward, Jefferson, James, Moreau, Johnson, Ximenez, and even Darius Slayton. And are there any other guys there that you say, yeah, I'd like to, assuming the numbers aren't anything crazy, I'd like to have this guy back?
Yeah, well, so first on the Julian Love piece, that would be, I still think it's kind of 50-50 on whether or not he comes back because they did like what they got from Jason Pinnick. They did draft Dane Belton. Xavier McKinney's, second contract is coming up. You know, they gave him the captaincy and the mic, basically for a reason. All right, so I have an interesting one, and it's going to bleed back to some of the free agents that are available. The person that I would bring back right now as currently constructed is Darius Slayton. I would bring back Darius Slayton because, market value, when you talk about market value, obviously SpotTrack is one place that you go just to see how they comp it. They've got Darius Slayton at $3.5 million a year. Now, one of the names that everyone talks about is Mecole Hardman, right? He has ties to Mike Kafka. What if I told you that Darius Slayton and him came into the NFL the same year, and Darius Slayton has more catches, more yards, and more average yards per catch. And Mecole Hardman is going for around $10 million on the open market. So you can get Darius Slayton for three times less than you could get Mecole Hardman. To me, that seems like a no-brainer. Slayton has been in the building. He did contribute. He's a guy that knows the system. It makes no sense to spend 3x on Mecole Hardman, who's never actually gotten to the potential that everyone said he had.
No, that's true. And it'll be interesting about where that market goes, right? Like you say, this is what we think it's going to look like. Will that wide receiver market soften a little bit? Maybe there's a friendlier deal there. I don't hate it. Like, again, I like keeping guys. And I think I've always been more of a Darius Slayton fan than maybe most. And by the way, there's been ebbs and flows to this over the life of the podcast where, like, I was completely out on him at one point just because of where the team was going. And then you see him come back around. We know the percentages. And a lot of times when you're a field stretcher and that's what your vertical threat is, what your bread and butter is, being a guy that catches 55, 60% of your passes, like, it looks bad on paper, but they're kind of these home run swings. And I mentioned yesterday about how I think the arrival of Darren Waller actually opens up a lot of opportunities for the guys on the outside, whether it's Slayton coming back, Isaiah Hodgins as well. The only thing that I'll mention about Darius Slayton, and this ties into what Joe Shane was discussing as they have some of these nice little internal videos, give you a little peek behind the curtain, no good information, like no intel, but they give you a nice little peek behind the curtain. He talked about going with obviously what we know is the mantra here, smart, tough, and dependable. Now, you can make the case that Darius Slayton certainly has been tough and dependable. He's been a consistent player, hasn't missed a lot of games over the course of his career. The other thing that he brought up, though, was it's a free agent market, the wide receiver position that's thin. We need guys that are smart, that can come in, that can play the system that we want to run, and that can be versatile. The only drawback, I think, to Darius Slayton in terms of the value of $3.5 million is that they tried to use him in a couple of different ways last year. Work him on some jet sweeps, right? Move him around the formation. Now, it can be the learning curve, but the eye test tells me he can't do a lot of that necessarily to the level that you need to. Now, with Wandell Robinson back healthy and adding another wide receiver in the draft, that doesn't necessarily matter as much. So I guess my throwback to you would be, where would you put him in the hierarchy of your wide receiver and tight end group and the guy, you know, who's going to be eaten first here? Assume we add a wide receiver in the draft as well. I'm assuming that you're saying you're the fourth. You're the fourth guy on the pecking order here, and we want to bring you into burn sometimes.
Well, I think that's a great question, and I think the answer is that I want to put Darius Slayton back in the position that I think will make him most successful. I think because of injuries on this roster, we started asking Darius Slayton to almost do things that he's not, you know, the best at, which is run these convoluted routes over the middle, these slants, try to create separation early. We know he's a burner. We know he can get vertical and downfield, but because our offensive line was depleted, because there was no Sterling Shepard, no no Wandell Robinson, Kenny Galladay was nowhere to be found, they basically asked Darius Slayton to do everything. If you bring him back for about $3 million, Adam, and you have Bellinger and you have Waller being able to attack the middle of the field, you have Wandell Robinson coming back healthy, being able to be that possession guy, you know, separation in short spaces. You don't know what you're necessarily going to get from Sterling Shepard yet, but you also have Isaiah Hodgins on the outside, which proved to be a big body wide receiver that can help this team. With that and Saquon Barkley in the backfield, now all of a sudden you're asking Darius Slayton, just do what you do best. Like, if we get the right protection, if there's other weapons that they have to cover, you're going to get a ton of one-on-one looks to be able to go vertical. And that's where he excels. That's where he can stretch the field. Asking him to do that one thing that he does well more often, I think makes this a more well-rounded, balanced team.
Yeah, I like that, man. Honestly, it's not a bad look. I know that some Giants fans may say, why even bother? Like, why bother with him or go for Harbin or whatever? But between the money and the fit, I 100% agree with you. Like, I have no problems with Darius Slayton being brought back. We talked about this in season just around the idea of, well, Darius Slayton for $8 million is different than Darius Slayton for $3.5 million. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. And if the market continues to be soft and the Giants don't get someone else here, then it's, hey, how are you? Like, come on back in. Let's have a conversation.
Well, and the last thing I'll say about the wide receiver market for the Giants, it does feel like they are going to go early round into a wide receiver would be my guess. But right now, there is still a lot of uncertainty with the Giants in the wide receiving group. Remember, Sterling Shepard signed for a veteran minimum. He's not even guaranteed to be on the roster come week one. Good story. Would love to see him. Who knows?
Yeah.
Is Wandell Robinson going to be ready week one to be able to play? Who knows? If you draft this wide receiver, they're coming in. They need to learn the whole new playbook. They're a rookie. There's going to be a learning curve. So really the only dependable one, you know, you talk about Colin Johnson coming off an ACL injury. Like, how is he going to look? Isaiah Hodgins is the only guy on the roster right now where you're like, okay, let's pencil him in as a starting wide receiver. So like, Darius Slayton actually at $3 or $3.5 million gives you that insurance to say like, there's going to be a learning curve. We don't know who's going to be out there week one. For me, it seems like just a safe play for the Giants that I think makes a lot of sense.
And Giants fans may or not want to hear this, but Richie James could also be viable in terms of safeguarding for Wandell Robinson. And by the way, there's a number of different players you could think about to fill that role too. So the other thing that I want to get to here then is what's gone on the market in terms of some things that we've talked about in this offseason that could be happening internally for the Giants. The Dexter Lawrence extension, the Andrew Thomas extension. But it's been fascinating. This is just a little footnote to put in your pocket around what's going to happen going forward and why maybe we won't see any movement specifically when it comes to Thomas. On the first day of free agency, you had Juwan Taylor agree to a four-year, $80 million contract with the Chiefs. And then you had Mike McGlinchey agree to a five-year, $87.5 million deal with the Broncos. Right now, it's talking about Andrew Thomas living in the $25 million plus year kind of range for his next contract. That number, while we know you can adjust how it lands, and maybe that can be a part of creating more cap room in the short term, but he isn't booked for a ton of money right now. I find it hard. I think there may be a pause on the Andrew Thomas contract simply for the fact that you have to wait until you get Kenny off, figure out Leonard Williams. There's a lot of other things to figure out here. If the Giants want to add more in free agency, I think it takes longer for a contract to happen there. If they think that we're going to stand pat and go draft, then you get internal and you start restructuring and finding ways to extend a couple of key players.
Well, I also think that you are going to take a bet, not necessarily on Andrew Thomas, because I think we all agree that he is a perennial left tackle for the next decade. He probably is a top five left tackle in the league right now and should be paid as such. I think the bet that Joe Shane has to figure out is, how does the market view tackles? We talked about some of the deals that were made, $20 million-ish for some of these players that are coming in, switching over from new teams. But look at the wide receiver free agent market. It didn't get as hot as we thought it would be. Now, some of that has to do with the talent that's there. But we're talking about $10, $11, $12 million when guys like Tyreek Hill are making $28, $29, $30 million. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins has a 30-something plus million-dollar cap hit next year. And so that wide receiver market went up and skyrocketed. And now on the free agent market, you can get them for like $10 million. Joe Shane has to also balance, like, where is the ceiling for the left tackle position? Like, at what point will teams just turn around and be like, no, we're not going to go any higher? Because whatever that number is, I think Andrew Thomas deserves it. But do you want to pay him early just to make him happy and then realize that actually the top tackles are going to only be getting $20, $22 million, and now our contract is an outlier with Andrew Thomas?
No, that's true too. And that's why I think like the patience aspect of this is pretty important here. Before I get into, because the last thing I want to touch on is like, who else is out there that you want the Giants to target? You know, is there someone out there and specifically on the offensive line and how they can make a decision potentially that will make it a lot easier at 25 and at 57 to go and target more weapons for Daniel Jones. But do you find the fact that nothing's happened with Leonard Williams already to be, I'm not going to say concerning, but just interesting? Because I would have thought like that's the first thing you sort out so that you free up the money that you need and you have all the flexibility. I understand it can happen in real time, but just looking and being like, well, we don't have any money to spend right now. So now that means if someone's available and you want to get a deal done, now you have to turn around and negotiate and figure things out with Leonard. And then by the time you come back, you don't know. There could be an opportunity that someone else comes in and poaches a key player that you're looking to add.
Well, that's the hard part. But Adam, I don't think it's the salary cap implications that are really challenging, because at 4 p.m. today is when the new league year starts. That's when you can see the Kenny Golladay money move around. You know, maybe the Giants have, these like, hey, just hold a second for us to be able to clear the funds. I think Leonard Williams is in a great position.
The check's going
to
clear. The check's in the mail, boys. Don't worry about it.
I promise. Just keep hitting refresh on your bank account. I promise it'll be there.
That was the Michael Scott. Now, I'm going to post-date these for every year for the next 4 years. And you call me before you cash in.
Yeah, I love that. The issue that is not necessarily related to money, I think the issue is related to who's left on the market and how much money we're willing to spend. So a perfect name is, there's a guard available named Dalton Risner, who is considered one of the top five or six guards that's still left. Second round draft pick out of the Broncos in 2019. You know, he played
13th overall on PFF's big board of top 100 remaining.
Right. And he graded out to a 61.1 on Pro Football Focus, just to give you an idea of where they grade him over everything. But his market value right now is over $10 million. So like something isn't really adding up still in that free agent market. It's like, hey, go out and try to get that $10 million that you asked for, Dalton. Like, if you can get it, go get it. But like, I think the Giants are playing in the more, hey, what's $4 or $5 million look like to be able to shore up one of these offensive line positions. So I think the next iteration is to probably go out and get a guard or a center, but it's going to be in that $5 million range, not in the $10 million range, which is where I think some of these guards or centers are still expecting.
So that's interesting, because it brings me to the final point that I wanted to make. And that is that there is a player in the top 100 still available, and his market value is $12.5 million per year, with an expectation of maybe a 2-year deal being what could be offered for him. 2 years at $25 million, average of 2.5. And that's Connor McGovern. And he's the would-be former center for the New York Jets. And I'm not, you know, we've talked, center has been a great debate for us over the years on this podcast, right? How early do you get him? Andy used to say, I wouldn't touch one before the 7th round. I'm joking, you know, but like 3rd or 4th round at the earliest. We've gotten a little bit, we've changed our tune a little bit on that. I said I would have taken one as high as the 2nd round. In mock drafts now, I'm earmarking a couple of different centers that the Giants could get at 57. But if you're saying, and the dream scenario for the Giants is that Deontay Banks is there at 25 and you lock up your corner to start with Adoree Jackson, and at 57, you want to go get a weapon, whether it's Rashee Rice or another wide receiver that you like, going out, if you can make the money work and getting a veteran center, this is what I talked about. My preference is to have the center that you pair with Daniel Jones for a decade to come. The other thing I don't mind doing is pairing him with a center that has a ton of NFL experience and is going to give you a level of consistency and a level of play that you have not had at that position in 5+ seasons, more than that, honestly, because I'm thinking back to names like John Feliciano and thinking back to names like Nick Gates, who was in there for a minute, thinking back to names like, it ends with an O. Oh, I'm going to forget him. You'll get it there in a second for me. The point is, there haven't been good enough players at that position for the Giants. And if I like Andrew Thomas, and they love him, if I believe in Evan Neal, but I know that Azudu needs to develop and that we know Glowinski was not what we expected of him last season in totality, give me 3/5 and then I can plug in other pieces and let other guys build around him. John Jalapio, I got there. Ha ha.
There you go. I was going to say, at the end of the day, Connor McGovern is a good name. It really depends on how much Joe Shane really wants to invest in free agency as opposed to the draft. $12.5 million is a lot for a center. It really is. But he's still, you know, he's under the age of 30. He's proven himself 69, almost a 70 Pro Football Focus grade. If that's where Joe Shane wants to invest his remaining funds, then you can look at veteran minimum guys coming in at the wide receiver position, at the safety position, and other places, because that is a lot of money to spend on an interior lineman, but sure, it may be needed because that has been a problem. Where the pressure has been coming is basically up the middle against Daniel Jones. If you really want to be able to utilize these weapons, going out and getting an established center that can be with Daniel Jones for the next 3 or 4 years might be the right move.
And the Giants, McGovern, going back to 2019, he played over 1,000 snaps and over 70 PFF grade. 969 snaps low in 2020. But the last 2 years, you mentioned 68. Last season before that, 76 nearly, 973, 1,100 reps at the center position. Like, I want reliability. I want consistency at that position. He's shown that and playing at a pretty high level. Is it worth 12.5? Who knows? But to your point, if you want to go into this draft class and you want to have flexibility to target best players available and maybe take away some of those needs, this is the way that you could do it. Free agency period will continue to roll on. Andy mentioned new league year, 4 p.m. today. That means that some new money can shift around and we'll start to get a sense of where this cap is moving forward. For all of the information that we're going to be breaking down, you get over to YouTube, you subscribe, you like it, you turn on the alerts so you see when we're going live with some of our episodes. You get us on the podcast feed, you follow us on social at One Giant Podcast, at Adam Armbrecht, at Andy Mack 214. We'll continue to break all these things down all off season long in what has been a very exciting one already for Big Blue. And as Andrew Mackowitz would want, need, and nay, demand that people know.
As always, let's go Big Blue.